Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I've got a little something for you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. My name is Marcus Speller. Luke Moore's here.
Is it Barry Grintle?
Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
Pete Dalton's here.
Hello, Marcus.
Barry isn't, sadly.
Marcus, I'm having trouble with my iPad playout system that plays the jingles and stuff. It's not responding to my touch, and I think this is the day I realise that I've become subhuman.
Yeah,
you've been
the capacitive touch doesn't work. Like my fingers aren't kind of, you know, they're not transmitting electricity.
Well, did you burn them off for any reason?
Yeah,
something you might do.
That's right. Yeah,
we've long known that Peter's part internet.
Yeah,
maybe he's gone the full hog, whole hog, and now you just got to think about the jingle and it'll play.
I've become part of the matrix. Let me have a think.
Oh my god!
Wow, managed it.
Despite that, I think it's time you swallowed your pride and went to see your GP.
Yeah.
Okay.
You are not the singularity.
Mr. Donaldson, welcome back.
Well done, Petey. Well done indeed. Hello. England this week got another non-defeat, didn't they?
Yeah. I think the technical term is they shared a win. I will be sharing lots more wins in the summer.
That's right. Yes, of course, we have had a bit of international football this week, and we're going to talk about it, damn it all, before we talk about the Premier League, which is just round the corner. Some of you will be pleased because there are non-believers in this parish, damn it all.
Yeah, we will weed them out.
Yeah,
we'll ahead of the big summer kickoff.
I have been listening to a lot of shows about Jonestown Massacre. And Marcus's fanaticism for the England team and the Sven thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of similarities, that's all I'm saying.
I'm with him. I'm the guy next to him who's even worse than the main guy.
I'm drinking his flavour aid.
I was going to say, Luke's mixing up the flavour aid right now.
What we should do, at some point we should do a live theatre show where we set a test about international football before people can buy a ticket, and then we have like a proper international football lovers live theatre show. Because, I'll tell you something now, you can bet your bottom dollar, when we get to the World Cup coming around, people are going to come up in the pub and go, "Oh, I love the World Cup.
Yeah,
where were you? Where were you in Lithuania?
Yeah. Where were you at the Phil Jonestown Massacre?"
Do you know that Jim Jones, or Jimba Jones as he was once known, used to sell monkeys door to door?
Marcus, can you stop him doing this?
What a job.
Yeah,
I want selling monkeys. Do you want a monkey? Yes, of course I do.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Football Ramble Preview Show.
How many have you got in the van?
We just had a little break. Yeah. England did look a little sloppy in defence. John Stones,
monkey trying to escape a van. Pete, tell me more.
He's not. He didn't have the best of first half.
He looked like a monkey trying to escape a van up against Immobile for a bit.
Yeah, that's right.
He can create issues where there are none.
Yeah.
That's my concern with Stones. I'm fairly certain it's not Pep Guardiola coaching him to do that.
And Jim, it's quite funny because the way you've put that is, in a certain situation, that sounds like it could be a good thing.
Mm.
What's good about your game? I can create issues where there were previously none. That sounds quite good.
Yeah. The creator. I like a creative defender.
Is that issues for the opposition defence?
Yeah. No, it's not. It's for our own defence.
I'm all for England trying to play out of the back. We were very excited during the Netherlands game. Yeah. And there might be the odd mistake, but with Stones doing that, I thought, no, that's you've not got much pressure on you. Get rid of it. Get rid doesn't always mean hoof it. Get rid means play a short pass to a free man who's there.
Well, Southgate's been quite interesting on this, I think. He's made it very clear that he's going to stick with Stones. And we imagine Stones...
And I think he should do.
And we imagine Stones will start the first game.
And Stones will stick with him.
Yeah. Well, he's got no choice. He's manager. But he's also said, he's told Stones in the past that he can be that defender who just clears it.
Mm.
He needs to... And I think he's sort of implying that as he gets a bit older, he'll learn when to do which of those options. But the thing is, I know we're sat here and we're all a lot older than John Stones, but he is 23 now, mm-hmm. and which isn't ridiculously young for a defender. If you look at, it might be an unhelpful comparison, but if you look at one of the best young defenders in the world, De Ligt of Ajax, who's mm-hmm. playing for Holland as well, I think he's 18. And he's not making those types of mistakes as often as Stones does in terms of decision making. So we have to be a little bit careful of making excuses for Stones forever.
Yeah,
the same way we'd be saying, "Oh, Shola Ameobi's a prospect" when he was like 29.
And bearing in mind that like Pep Guardiola was a defensive midfielder and Gareth Southgate was a defender, so it's like you sort of go, they've got enough people around him to sort of teach him, yeah, don't do that again.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do that again, idiot.
And that's the curious thing about football coaching is that. If it's an individual error, you can't really blame the management for that.
No.
You train them as much as you can, you coach them as much as you can to make the right decision. If they make an individual error like that, which of course against Italy wasn't punished, but might well be punished in a future game, I'm not sure the coaching can really bear any brunt of that. They've just got to make a decision about how many errors is too many errors.
Yeah, well, Guardiola says about Stones, didn't he? He said, I love this player, I love his mistakes, I love everything. And also, I guess if you look at the way Stones would have been coached throughout his career, you know, he wouldn't have been taught to be doing this sort of stuff at Everton, whereas Guardiola is bringing that whole kind of playing it out from the back thing to him. So, though he is 23 and does have quite a few, you know, games under his belt, he's still learning a fairly new thing. And yeah. I suppose Southgate has said he is trying to bring that to England, trying to bring what the players are doing at their clubs in. So it's as you say, though, it's how many mistakes is enough. Where Southgate is obviously is deciding Stones is going to be his main man at the heart of the defence. Yeah, and as you guys said, I think that's correct. But this is something we might just have to suck up.
Okay, so I got the wrong end of the stick. I like him. I think he should play for England. I think he should start. I'm just pointing out that he's got 24 odd caps now, and that's a few.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I wouldn't. If he does that in the tournament, fine. I wouldn't be too harsh just yet. But yes, there are little ricks in his game with regards to getting caught in possession in front of his own goal. I wonder though, with England starting a little bit sloppy and then they went 1-0 up and then they played quite well. Probably should have had a second if a final pass would have been maybe a little bit more accurate. And then the game sort of petered out.
Possibly a penalty as well.
Yeah, indeed. And there was one, of course, at the other end.
Yeah.
But I wonder with England, it was the type of performance with those sort of that sloppy nature and those sloppy moments in the game that we didn't see so much in Amsterdam. And I just wonder with England, is there something about playing at Wembley where they kind of just switch off a bit?
Yeah.
And I got a feeling of that. The crowd are very quiet. They kind of sat there. It's another England friendly.
Yeah.
Yes, it was better than some other recent England friendlies at Wembley. They've already qualified. They're playing a team. Yes, it's Italy, but they've not qualified. So Italy aren't massively up for it as they might
be. Well, we heard from James yesterday that Italy are in a shambles as far as their own media and their own football following public are concerned. I know you were at the game, so I wanted to ask you how it was from the stadium, but just quickly before I do that,
from Club FA.
Yeah, were you with old Zizou again? Or
no, there was, I was a bit disappointed. I thought I was going to get a meal beforehand, but no.
Did
you buy some food outside the ground?
Did you go out for the second half?
Yeah, but, I had to, Jim. There was nowhere to go.
But just before we get into what the game was like in the stadium, it's interesting because my interpretation of what you're talking about there with the mistakes and whether they're up for it, mine was almost if this is a side effect of Southgate making them so relaxed and making that shirt a little bit less heavy and letting them express themselves and follow a system and finally shaking off this baggage that comes along with playing for England, then to be honest, I'll accept a mistake or two because it shows they're relaxed.
I don't want to be so far the other way.
They make so many mistakes, they're scared.
I think we're genuinely forgetting how sloppy and sluggish England teams have been in the past. Even when we had Beckham and Gerrard and Lampard, they were dropping passes left, right and centre. Wayne Rooney would lose the ball every 5 minutes and then run off, tear off back and tackle and get a yellow card. We were sloppy all the time.
Hang on.
I thought that was a decent England performance.
Yeah, okay,
I thought we looked incisive. I thought we looked quick. They couldn't deal.
We were the better team.
They couldn't deal with the turn and they couldn't deal with the pace of our forward three. I thought that was a good performance.
Yeah. Well, let's all just take a moment to appreciate Pete's positivity about England. But are you... So, okay, let me...
You had some bad news,
I'm going to interpret what you just said there, and it leads me to ask you this question. So, if I'm right in saying, how would you fit Rooney into this England side?
I was thinking about like all this stuff. I agree with you, Pete. I think it's actually a sort of nice, refreshing...
Bit of perspective.
..era for England at the moment, because I think when Roy Hodgson came in, what he did very cleverly was reduce expectations, and it felt like sort of the football-going public in general were very ready for that.
Yeah, his reduction of expectations, Jim, was... going out in the first round of a World Cup and being beaten up by Iceland. There you go, Gareth.
Absolutely, completely. But the thing is, you know, England have clamoured for a really sort of big, you know, successful, big name manager for a long time. We ended up with Gareth Southgate, who didn't want it. We all sort of like laughed and thought, oh God, this has happened.
Well, we tried it with Capello.
But I mean, is there an argument that Gareth Southgate is almost our Chris Coleman? And we're coming out of the sort of era of reduced expectations into a sort of quiet optimism. Now,
Chris Coleman going to student nights in Spain.
He had a messed up washing machine.
Yeah.
I believe him. No, but I think, you know, I think people are quietly optimistic, not expecting them to win anything, obviously. But like, I look at this England team and think, we might actually enjoy this World Cup.
I know what you mean.
Is all I want at this point.
So what you're saying is, so when England played, and I know we joke about Sven and so on, but and he got England to quarterfinals, but it was undoubtedly his time at England will always be looked at as a slight disappointment, because with those players, they should have done more, and trying to shoehorn that those two in the centre of midfield, as we've all talked about. But when England played, for example, Trinidad and Tobago, I think it was, in the 2006 World Cup, England won the game 2-0, and it took a while, and it was a frustrating end performance, and it was a relief when England got the breakthrough. And what you're suggesting, Jim, and I actually do follow your thoughts on this, is when England do play Panama and Tunisia, for example, two games England should win, dare we suggest we might actually enjoy those games?
Well, quite, yeah. I think they won't. It's not necessarily going to be a cautious safety first approach. It's not going to be all-out attack either. But what we've seen from Southgate is he likes England on the front foot, because he's got the belief that the players want the ball enough to be able to do that. And I think that's exactly, you know, if we beat Panama 3-0, the four of us are going to be losing our minds. Mm. We're going to believe we can win it.
I do think that I agree with a lot of what's been said there. I would just add that
it's the hope that kills you.
I would just add that England are 18-1 with Bet365 to win the World Cup this summer.
Oh.
And so £10 will return £190, including stake.
And you're right, it will return £190, including
stake. I like what he's doing with the team. I like, as I said before last week, I want them to play with a bit of pace and a bit of purpose and a bit of tempo, because they've got pace in their team throughout their team.
That's a good point.
I want them to look like they're implementing a plan, however flawed that plan may look in retrospect after the tournament. We should have done this, we should have done that. The reality is, I trust Southgate to make the best of the team he's got and to work through a plan. And we also have to mention someone that we haven't mentioned really at all in this build-up to the World Cup after these friendlies, is Steve Holland. A very, very well-respected coach. Mm-hmm. You speak to any player who's worked under him or knows of him or works with him now, they rate him. And there was an interesting chat on the BBC with Andy Brassel, also of this parish, this week. And he said, or one of them on there said, this smacks of Steve Holland. Gareth Southgate's taken the influence of when he played under Venables and when he did this, that and the other. And he's got a format that he likes to play with. And Steve Holland is a brilliant coach. And if anyone can get the best out of the players that we've got on our squad, which isn't packed full of world beaters, and we can talk about the lack of a proper, genuine, creative midfielder, which is clearly an obvious omission from the current squad, but that's something we're probably going to have to deal with. But if they play to their strengths and play to their potential, they might surprise a couple of people. And that really, at this stage, for a team who's ranked about 15th in the world or whatever, is really all you can ask for.
I agree. I do like Southgate, and I like what's going on here, I think I said before. And also, there is something to be said that he has tournament experience with England, and he also has extreme personal disappointment with England, of course, the penalty.
Extreme personal disappointment.
So is everyone.
Yeah.
So like an energy drink.
That should be a podcast hosted by Pete Donaldson.
I don't think Gareth Southgate was any more disappointed than me at the time, just because he fucking did it. I was there as well.
You know what I mean. Yeah. And, but you didn't get a Pizza Hut advert out of it.
I didn't.
But
ate a lot of pizza.
I sure did. In many ways, I'm a walking advert for it anyway.
But with Southgate, though, I think some people think he's a bit flimsy and could be a bit of a pushover. I don't agree with that at all. I think Southgate has taken decisions that other England managers haven't done, and I think that he is very happy to go with what he thinks and not be too swayed by the media. And I think he's a very calm manager, a very calm approach. You know, the stupid questions he was being asked about Russia and the political situation and all the rest of it, and he just battered it away.
I think that's a very important point, partly because I think he's intelligent, so he's able to deal with that. Yep. Secondly, he has made brave decisions. I mean, it would be the easiest thing in the world. We would have been, I mean, 10 years ago, look at the Cahill situation, which now isn't really a situation. He's not playing for Chelsea. He's not being picked for England. I feel like back in the day, he would have had about 15 to 20 more caps that he didn't deserve because no one would make a big decision. Southgate looks like he's made that decision. And very quickly, anecdotal and maybe not too much to read into, but something I heard on the TV when I was watching the game against Italy is because it was quiet in the stadium, as you said, he had to bring on Jordan Henderson, or he chose to bring on Jordan Henderson. Mm-hmm. And you could hear Southgate saying, Jordan, come on, mate, quick as you can, come on. Like, he was actually, it was really surprising to hear Southgate do that. I sort of thought Southgate would be the sort of guy who would be quite gingerly approaching that, or maybe even ask a coach. No, he was straight in there. But what was it like? How was it perceived in the stadium itself?
I can say that the most encouraging thing...
The parts of the game you saw, by the way, because I know you were filling your face for a little bit.
That's just not true.
In your Adidas tracksuit.
The most encouraging thing for me was that it took 79 whole minutes for a Mexican wave to appear.
That's not bad.
79 minutes.
Might be a record.
I was going to say, I thought, blimey.
And it was you who started it, wasn't it?
I thought, well, we've got to fill a quota at least. Yeah. Get it in. That is a tradition at Wembley Stadium.
So are you guys, just very quickly, are you guys more positive about the World Cup now than you were before these two games?
Yeah, very much so. Yes. Very much so. And Raheem Sterling, we've got to mention him. Playing in that role, I thought he was excellent.
They were so scared. And when I say turn, I think I wrote on WhatsApp, turn and pace. I meant the turn that he does and also the pace. Like, he scares the crap out of teams.
Especially teams as sluggish as Italy.
Well, I like England's reactions for Jamie Vardy's goal, the quick free kick.
That was really good.
Yeah, Sterling on more than one occasion was basically
hacked down,
like, clearly fouled and just got up and carried on. Yeah. And I like that. And that threw Italy a little bit, and he bought his own advantage there. Really.
See, Delhi, that's how it's done, mate.
I often talk on the show about how I'd like a player at the base of that midfield to pick up the ball on the half turn, drive at a player. Well, it looks like Southgate solved that problem because he's playing one holding midfielder now behind a four, in a two or three and a three or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's only really playing one out and out holding midfielder in these games. And the player who can pick the ball up on the half turn, as Pete rightly says, is Raheem Sterling. He's got to play just behind Kane in the first game if everyone's fit, and Vardy's got to be introduced from the bench. That's how I would do it.
Lingard can also play on the half turn. I think Lingard and Oxlade-Chamberlain have been big pluses, and they've done themselves a world of good. They will go to the tournament, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, it's not even a case of will they be on that England jet. Will there be in the starting 11 is the question.
Yeah. Lingard now, plays like a 28-year-old. Like, he's so comfortable. He's so comfortable with his own abilities.
He is 25.
Okay, all right. I thought he was about 23. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. No, but I take the point. He's playing with a player who has played for England for many years.
And bearing in mind, like, Man United are much maligned, aren't they?
They are. But he's been one of the more positive sparks in that side.
Marcus, on that, of those 10 outfield players that played against Italy, 7 of them have got what you would call decent pace.
Yes.
Every player except, the centre-backs, it doesn't really matter, but obviously it does in Walker's case, and he's one of those 7 that are quick. Stones, Dyer and Tarkowski, you wouldn't say, are necessarily quick. Mm-hmm. Stones isn't slow for a centre-back, by the way. But the rest of them, Young, Lingard, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Trippier, Sterling, Vardy, and Walker, fast.
Yeah, very good.
Even 32-year-old Ashley Young is still really
quick.
Well,
I was about to say Ashley Young.
Vardy's 31 as well.
Mm. Yeah, I like Ashley Young, actually, in that wing-back position, and I think he plays it well. I think he can deliver a ball in. He's got great attacking credentials from his career as a winger and all that kind of stuff.
And Ross hasn't played.
Yeah.
And he can switch anywhere.
And we know Young can defend well. I mean, the obvious recent example is that performance against Liverpool when he kept Mo Salah quiet, you know. And with Young as well, there were times... My only slight frustration is the holding midfielder that England have in that system. Eric Dier is probably more suited because Jordan Henderson, I do think, needs someone there. Henderson, to me, should play in either the role that Lingard or Oxlade-Chamberlain were playing. And I think Henderson as a holding midfielder on his own might be a bit tricky. And against better opposition, I think we might struggle. But I don't think Southgate would set up necessarily like that against better opposition. I think Dier would probably be his first choice there. But Young had a lot of room out on the flank. And I remember the first half thinking, get it out there, spread it quickly. And nobody was doing it. Southgate obviously saw that. Second half, it was much better. Walker was getting the ball and pinging it straight out to Ashley Young. And it was providing, it was causing problematic at times for Italy, you know. Mm. So I think England looked really good. And looking at the goalkeeper situation on the basis of distribution, Pickford's probably ahead of Butler now, isn't he?
Yeah, there's not much in it. I'd be happy with either of them.
Yep.
I think he'll start with Pickford. It's funny because we're getting seduced into this thing we always get seduced into ahead of a World Cup. It's almost like these problems we talk about, lack of a creative midfielder or an out-and-out creative midfielder, mm-hmm. the centre-back problem, the goalkeeping problem, these things are slowly starting to be solved in the best way they can be solved with the resources that England have. So I feel comfortable about the goalkeeper.
But in the same way that John Stones creates his own problems and problems for the team, I think the media, and us included, we create the problems by going, oh, what keeper shall we go for? And yeah. I think I've stuck to my guns in that keepers, by and large, you know.
There's no point having them.
No point in having them.
Yeah. Have an extra midfielder.
Gigi Buffon, definitely agree with you. Yeah. But just to finish on England, I think before, Luke, something you touched upon there is we think, oh, which player can play that role? Because if we get that player right, and then actually, no, look at the system, look at the players. You're going to have, it is England, we're going to have little problems all over the pitch. But if we can play as a cohesive unit where people know their jobs and can hunt in packs like we saw in Italy and all that kind of stuff, that will go some way. If your system is tight, it will hopefully take care of a few players. Yeah. You know, the parts are... What is it? The sum of the parts are greater than the individual parts. What is the expression? You know what I mean?
Greater than the sum of their parts.
Those little fires out.
And I think the options we have off the bench, I mean, we talked about pace. We haven't even mentioned Rashford. Rose is a nice option with pace as well, who admittedly hasn't played an awful lot of football, but he will probably still go. And you've got Lallana to come in as well and offer you something a bit different. And for a player who's been out of the game for such a long time, he looked quite short on the ball.
Lallana could well start for England. He's a lovely kind of, if you know what I mean, 360-degree player. Plays
anyway,
on
positive and all that. Around,
really. England's first opponents at the World Cup are Tunisia. They beat Costa Rica 1-0 in a friendly. Sunderland player Wahbi Khazri, on loan at Rennes, of course, scored. He could have been sent off after lashing out at Costa Rica's Kendall Watson, a classic Costa Rican name. And Watson reckons that Khazri could be wound up and said, England will see what happened and they will try and take advantage of it.
I love this.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Mind games on England's behalf for no apparent reason.
It's a shame that Vardy and him would play at different ends of the pitch. I don't think Vardy would start anywhere, but Vardy is the man to wind up any opponent. Now, the match was played in Nice, and after the full-time whistle, hundreds of Tunisia fans ran on the pitch in celebration. I love that. A friendly. You don't get that at Wembley, do you?
No.
And for good reason, Jim. It's dangerous. Khazri was loving it and was getting fans who remained in the stands to throw their phones at him so he could take selfies. He'd then take a selfie and then lob the phone back into the crowd. What trust!
High risk.
What trust! I mean, it's great.
For anyone who saw the goal, it was astonishingly inept defending.
Yeah.
I mean, we sat here to do about 15 minutes on John Stones' mistakes. I mean, that, from Costa Rica's point of view, ahead of a World Cup, was absolutely horrendous.
Absolutely brilliant.
It was terrible. It was funny to see Khazri doing that stuff. I mean, the worry I have about England trying to set out to target a particular player who's sort of quite... prone to sort of outbursts. That's going to blow up in our faces.
Just play your game.
If anyone's going to get sent off for an altercation in a knockout game in England or even a group game, it's going to be an England player.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Before we go to correspondence, a little mention. It doesn't matter if it's international break. Mitrovic is still among the goals.
Yeah.
Serbia beat Nigeria 2-0 at Barnett's Hive Stadium. Strange to see an international of two decent sides with very good players at a little stadium like that.
Yeah.
But
having a dig at the good people down at Barnett.
I said it was strange.
Yeah. What's strange about it?
You know.
What's strange about Barnett, Marcus?
Mitrovic scored two goals. Peter.
He did score two goals. One was like right down the middle of the goal. He's scoring goals for fun, but like...
Do you think that...
Yeah, everything. It's almost like everything he touches goes into the net. Not what you did at Newcastle at all, is it?
Is that because being at Newcastle was no fun?
No, maybe not.
He needs the fun in his life.
He needs the freedom.
I'd like to think that Mad Dog Martin Allen had something to do with this at Barnett Stadium.
It's possible. Uh-huh. He certainly would claim it. Alexander Mitrovic is 100-1 to be top scorer at the World Cup with Bet365.
Worth a punt.
Look...
£10
will
return £1,010, including stake, should Mitro set fire
Serbia,
to everything.
Serbia,
he's scoring goals for fun. What's Serbia's group?
Brazil, Costa Rica, and Switzerland. He could get
a hat trick against Costa Rica and
one
maybe another goal against Switzerland.
Get in the second round.
He might even score against the other team.
Against those boys from Brazil. My goodness. All right, then. Talking of scoring, let's go to Pete Donaldson because he's got some correspondence.
Imagine if I'm watching Mitrovic, a non Newcastle player. Out, farmed out on lawn, scoring against Brazil in the World Cup. Piss off. Oh, dear.
I think they could get a fairly straightforward second round game if they qualify as well.
Yeah.
Oh, it's worth it.
Are we going through the permutations?
It's worth it.
Are we piling on?
If Germany slip up, which isn't... I mean, Germany win their group, then Serbia will probably play them in the second round. Because you wouldn't imagine Serbia win their group.
Mm.
But if they don't, they get Mexico, Sweden, or South Korea.
Mitro's on fire. Your defence is terrified.
Right, so we got an email from Sam. A lot of trustworthy Barrys came in because you're talking about how untrustworthy Barrys were.
Contesting too much,
is Barry. I know, right? Sam says, I would like to suggest Barry Scott from the Silic Bang advert as a reliable Barry. I'm sure Peter's used one of those at some point to clear a questionable stain.
It's not a real bloke. Barry Scott's not a real man, so by default,
he's
you can't
a figurehead
trust that
for
Barry.
All Barrys. He's a figurehead for all Barrys.
Yeah,
George says, hi chaps, I would like to take issue with you saying that Gareth Barry is the most trustworthy of all Barrys on the show this week. No more than 3 months ago, a nice Spanish taxi driver left him alone for 5 minutes to grab a Big Mac and the absolute dickhead stole the taxi.
Yeah, yeah, he's lost our trust.
Trustworthy my behind, says George, a very disgruntled Albion fan. Christaps Paddock, how could you all forget world-famous Barry and 44th President of the United States, Barack Obama?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, he follows SV Darmstadt, 98 on Twitter. Is that trustworthy? I think so.
Barry Obama.
His real name is Barry Kabama.
Yeah, you reckon? Yeah. Good news. And also, two trustworthy Barrys is from Tom Murray. Barry Douglas, wing back for Wolves. He's notched 12 assists and 4 goals this season. And two, my dad Barry is reasonably trustworthy. And he ends the email with an interesting bit of information. Which makes me laugh because he's messed it right up. Additional piece of interesting information. Former Cologne and Wolves Polish winger Slavomir Pesko has kidneys.
What?
This man has 4 kidneys.
Does he really?
And that's why he's interesting.
4 kidneys?
4 kidneys. It rarely happens. It's like a 1 in a million shot. And apparently it's conditioned. It's caused by a glitch in the first trimester when instead of splitting in half, it splits in 4.
Is this an advantage?
Apparently... people who have duplex kidneys, they're called. Apparently, it helps you drink. Really, I'd love a bit of that.
You should be donating them.
But if it's very rare to have them fully, well, that's you can donate them if they're fully grown. You can donate the kidneys.
Have a couple of kidneys.
It's twice the sort of surface area of general kidney. It's not just 4 small ones rather than 2 big ones.
No, I think it's 4 small. I think it's 4 regular sized kidneys.
Cool.
There's enough room to mess around in there.
Well, if he was so
sounds like a 2 Ronnie sketch.
If this Barry was so trustworthy, wouldn't he be donating 2 of them?
Yeah, maybe.
If he donates them, should you be grateful? Because I mean, has he got 2 extra anyway? So he's only doing what he should be doing.
Emphatically, you should be grateful if anyone's giving you an organ.
Donate or sell them.
Call us to Dr. Donaldson. There's enough room to mess around in
there. There's enough room to mess around
4 candles, 4 kidneys.
I was going to say something foul. Carry on.
Yeah.
There we are.
If you want to get involved, short at thefootballramble.com.
Make a pie out of them.
You can eat your placenta, can't you?
Barry pie.
Yeah.
A Barry pie. Steak and Barry. No, Barry and kidney pie. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go to the Premier League after this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Guys, we have a problem. The boss said that a new devil is arriving.
That's the best take.
Yeah.
Of all the shooting, that's the best take. Yeah,
right. Do you want to go again? No, I'm all right.
Paul Stretford said, you've got 10 minutes with him. That's it.
Yeah,
all right, how many takes can we do? Just the one? All right, we'll have to use it.
Look, just in a word, is Paul Stretford a good bloke?
The boss has said a new devil is arriving.
A devil is arriving.
You do, Jim.
Amazing.
The boss says a new devil is arriving.
Is it arriving or coming?
Arriving.
Is it arriving?
Arriving.
Arriving. It's such a weird word to use.
Let's have it again.
I can't remember what button.
Not that
guys,
one.
We have a problem. The boss said that a new devil is arriving.
Arriving? Would Wayne Rooney say arriving?
It's a new bloke arriving.
I like Wazza. It's just endearing. I think it's endearing.
He was very good on Monday Night Football, and that is not an easy gig.
No.
Yeah. Maybe how would you know?
Yeah, well, he told me.
Yeah.
He wipes down the iPad.
Pete was going to do it, but yeah. Chris Finch got in there.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, our Acast Plus special for this month of March will be out very, very soon. And for all our Acast Plus subscribers, I thoroughly recommend. We talk about Blackburn Rovers winning the Premiership, the craze of the transfer window, and that time Carlos Tevez got Neil Warnock Sheffield United relegated.
And they were all requested by Acast Plus subscribers and listeners who get to choose their very own, they get to produce their very own show, deciding what we talk about. To get access to that, download the Acast app and subscribe to Acast Plus. It's just $1.99 a month, and you get that special every month, different obviously every month, and you also get ad-free rambles for every single ramble. Acast Plus is on the Acast app.
Super. Super.
If people are coming up with suggestions for the shows and they're basically producing the show, can they edit the show?
Yeah.
Can I farm that one out as well?
As a bonus, you get to do all of our work.
Yeah, and you get to press Pete's buttons, so to speak. Mentioning Carlos Tevez there and Sheffield United, because they were managed by Stephen Warnock. Mm. Those two have been in the news recently. Mm. Carlos Tevez has apparently picked up an injury playing football while visiting his brother in the Slammer.
We cross now to our Carlos Tevez correspondent, Jim Campbell, for more.
Yeah, just classic, isn't it? Absolutely classic of the man. He lied about it initially to Boca Juniors. Don't know if you missed that.
No, I see that.
He lied and he claimed something else had happened. I don't know how the truth came out. But
You lied to me.
He should do his rehab in the prison jail.
But Jim, do you not? Is there not a sort of shred of admiration for a player who's really well paid, missing playing for his team because he picked up a knock in a maximum security jail?
I mean, it's an impressive thing to put yourself into, though, isn't it?
But it's better than dropping like a bottle of aftershave on your foot or something.
Absolutely,
like that.
It is. But at the same time, it shows utter like contemptible disregard for your employers. You know, that Boca Juniors pay him to do a job, and he's just come over. Yeah, I'll start playing football in prison.
I find it quite interesting that Tevez's brother, now obviously have some kind of relationship because he's going to visit him inside. And his brother's inside for quite a long time.
I bet his brother's like up at the warden all the time going, I just want to move to another jail. I'm not playing for this thing. You've got to get me to another jail.
Well, without knowing any of the story, so I approach this with caution, his brother's in there. I think it was an attempted robbery of an armed
robbery,
vehicle.
I think it was,
or something like that. Yeah, so obviously a serious offence. But approach it with caution. You know, Carlos Tevez was on about £250,000 a week at Manchester City, and then he earned about £650,000 in China. And I thought, if you're short of a few bob, can you not ask your brother for something? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. True.
But then, easier said than done, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quite. There has to be more to that story.
Next thing you know, you're out of the game at the weekend because you picked up a knock in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all need a hustle, I suppose.
Yeah.
What a model pro.
Speaking of model pros, I'm looking forward to this one.
Paul Pesci-Salido.
Your man.
He told a story about Neil Warnock, which surfaced this week.
And we crossed live to our Paul Pesci-Salido.
Look-alike
Marcus
man.
Well, old Paul, he said, when they were both at Sheffield United, Warnock took the players on a team bonding weekend to Scarborough, as you do.
Yeah, glamorous.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. And Pesci-Salido said that they went 10-pin bowling, and Warnock convinced everyone to put £10 in the pot with the winner taking all. You can imagine Warnock trying to get a bit of team spirit.
Come on. We'll just have a tenner on it.
Tenner's into pot.
And I'll get some pints of mild as well.
Yeah.
And we'll have a lovely time at the bowling.
Yeah, winner takes all.
I love bowling, do I?
Who wants scratchings?
Yeah. Well, who's put tenner in the fruity then?
So then, as Pesci-Salido then went on to say, we all agreed for some fun. Then Warnock pulled out his own bowling shoes and custom ball, shot 250 and took all our money.
I like to think it was one of those resin-based balls with a rose in the middle.
With his name on it.
Like a kingpin.
Colin Wanker on it.
Yeah. I think that is absolutely superb.
Colin Strike Wanker.
All right, lads, you never get in a bowling match with me. You take all your money.
I've made 150 quid here. Who wants a pint?
I love that so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His own shoes. Right, lads, should we begin now? Well,
I love that he's telegraphing that he's mugging them off as well and then going through with it.
It's like a Paul Newman-esque hustle.
Yeah.
It's
massive. Inspirational. The same sort of hustle that Karen Brady did later on.
Yeah.
I said
moments earlier, we all need a hustle, Peter. Yeah. And the football ramble seems to be ours. Right, ladies and gentlemen, as promised, let's go to the Premier League. Club football is back, sadly. But we've got to get through it until the summer, of course. Chelsea host Spurs this week, and it's fifth versus fourth. It's a big one. Chelsea need a win to keep their top four hopes alive. Or as if Spurs win, they'll be 8 points above those Blues. Oh, it's a big one, Jim. You can't deny.
No, I'd be a fool to deny that.
everyone's skin, I reckon, is going to be wonderfully smooth because everyone will have been on their flights and they will have been in upper class. So they will have rubbed themselves with the really posh grease that they give you on posh flights.
I've never been on upper class.
Posh grease. No, but they give you like a bag of toiletries, don't they? What, and moisturisers and things like that. All the football's going to come out and going to smell lovely.
Pete spends most of the Luke and Pete show trying to get people who work for BA to get him on the friends and family.
Hasn't worked. Very clear.
No, and the problem with it, Mark, is we're talking about upper class, and it's because Pete used to be on friends and family with his friend from BA.
Yeah.
So he's had a taste of the biscuit.
Yeah.
And now it's been taken away.
The business
taste
class
of the grease. Yeah.
You five, you strike me as a man who flies first class, Peter.
Can you imagine?
Because
how
you
much
smell
that would
beautiful
cost?
And your skin is so smooth. That's always a dead giveaway, isn't it? Yes,
anyway, what are the odds for this game?
What are the odds for me travelling business class again?
The Spurs have won 5 out of their last 6 and haven't lost in the league since the 16th of December, which was against Manchester City.
It's a big old gap, though, isn't it?
It's a huge gap. Chelsea have lost 4 out of their last 6 in the league.
Spurs have also never won at Stamford Bridge in the Premier League.
I was about to say, their record at Stamford Bridge is very, very poor. And you would argue at this point that Spurs are, you know, on form, as Marcus has just pointed out, are a better team than Chelsea. It's always interesting to see how this international break has affected teams at the top end because they have a lot of players going away and doing lots of bits and pieces. It's a Sunday afternoon game, so I'm sure it'll be, I think it's a 4 o'clock game, so it'll be good. Spurs to beat Chelsea on Sunday is 21-10 with Bet365, so £10 returns, £31 including stake, should Tottenham win. It's a real conundrum because Spurs are probably a better team in better form, but their record at Stamford Bridge is poor. And it's one of those, it feels to me one of those games where Chelsea always find a way.
Didn't
Chelsea beat Spurs earlier in the season? I think they did. 2-1. Own goal, Batshuayi and Alonso scored 2.
Also, and Spurs have been playing all together in the England side. So.
Yeah. Well, Ali's not been picked, Pete, as you mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Well, we spoke about Harry Kane a little while ago and saying, actually, we're not sure how much Spurs will miss him, but their win percentage under Pochettino with him is 59%, whereas it's 39% without, which is quite a big drop-off, as I think you mentioned on that show, Luke. So that's another thing that certainly goes in Chelsea's favour. Could be a draw, screams draw to me.
And Arsenal will be cheering for Spurs, right?
No.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah, of course they are.
No, we're not.
Yes, you are, because...
Doesn't happen.
Well, be the bigger man, Jim.
Yeah, be the...
Oh, what is it, ageist?
Spurs it.
Yeah. Well, I think Arsenal secretly will want Spurs to beat Chelsea as they could at least be closer to salvaging a Europa League place this season. Presumably they don't go on to win the Europa League this year. Wenger said in a recent interview that if the results aren't good enough, which they're not, then he'll take the consequences, but feels that the older he gets, the criticism he receives is more about age discrimination.
I think more than ageism, it's just criticism, isn't it? It's just good old-fashioned criticism, maybe even resultism.
Can I go for...
This is resultism.
Can I go further than that, Jim, and say, actually, I feel that from where I'm sitting, he probably gets an easier ride than he would do because he's an old man now. And I've said over and over again on this show, a lot of the abuse he gets is distasteful. And part of the reason it's distasteful is because he's an older man. He should be treated as an elder statesman of the game because he undoubtedly is that. I think if he was a Mourinho-type character, a bit younger and a bit more brusque and a bit more sort of combative, he'd get an endless amount of shit.
Well, I think
loads more than he gets now.
He gets a hell of a lot now.
But I think it would be worse. I'm just saying it would be worse.
Yeah. In the media, maybe. I think Mourinho often... I think that's irked Mourinho in the past when he said Wenger's a specialist in failure and all that kind of stuff. And so I think your point might be right there. But I do like that kind of resultism. When Mourinho will say, this is performanceist or something, if the performance isn't brilliant. But yes, towards the top of the table, there's stuff going on there. But at the bottom of the table, this is where the business end of the league gets very, very interesting.
Business.
West Ham host Southampton. That is an enormous fixture.
Absolutely huge.
Especially given the context of what happened in the last game against Burnley. Mm-hmm. It's been good timing for West Ham. There's been such a long break between games because, it was... We all remember what happened. It was horrible and it was toxic. And Mark Noble's written an open letter to the fans to try and sort of regain some calm. So, that's been great for them. But obviously, it's still... There could potentially be a bit of a powder keg atmosphere there.
Hopefully, there won't be any fans of the Tunisia national team.
Quite. I heard the letter started with, it's time to renew your season ticket. We've got plenty of room.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, while you're here...
Unprecedented views of the pitch.
Unprecedented, like you're not expecting to see any of the pitch.
Up close and personal.
Unprecedented in the way that no one's been this far away from the pitch before.
We've insist on coming on, we've got a track.
That's why people do run on here. Have a good
couple of weeks ago.
We've mirrored the ceiling, so you can actually see the pitch.
A couple of weeks ago, I was very supportive of West Ham fans and how upset they are. So as a penance for that, I am taking the piss out of them this week.
Yeah,
it's only fair. Yeah. It's the circle of life. But neither team are very good. West Ham are, 2 points above Southampton?
Yep. In West Ham in 17.
It's an absolutely massive game in the context of the relegation. So I wonder whether West... It's funny because both of these teams probably would prefer an away game. Mm. So Southampton have got an advantage in that sense, which is a weird thing to say because you think, well, you rely on your home form.
Well, it's one of the reasons I think Southampton are going to win the game.
Southampton have only won 2 away games this season, and they're against West Brom and Crystal Palace. So it's teams from around that area. So... I don't know.
But yeah, Southampton have been.
But Jim, they've only won 5 all season.
Well, yeah.
So my point isn't necessarily results-based. It's more a case of they found it on occasion very hard to score goals. It's been a difficult atmosphere down there, I know, because I've been down there. And West Ham, of course, problems speak for themselves. Mm. You can treat it as a bit of a holiday, the same way Arsenal did in the Europa League with Milan. So, look, we'll wait and see. But, I mean, I would think that West Ham will be under a huge amount of pressure despite the international break. And I agree with Jim, the international break came along at a very good time for them. People don't forget that quickly, though. And if it starts badly, you know what the fans are like down there. Yeah. It's very, very tough.
But this is a great chance for West Ham to go 5 points clear of 18th and move up a couple of places. Stoke away to Arsenal. Swansea at Old Trafford. Liverpool are at Crystal Palace. Seldom do you get a chance like this.
Yeah. To really put some distance.
Absolutely right. And so Moyes has got to really get them up for this one. But I just fear that Southampton may win this.
Well, West Ham are 17-10 to beat Southampton with Bet365. So £10 will return £27 including stake should there be a home win.
Yeah, there you are. Mm. And also as well, towards the bottom of the league, Newcastle are playing Huddersfield.
Yeah, that's a big one as well.
But... Yeah, so everybody, there's a lot of stuff going on down there. As there tends to be. A lot of narratives.
More on that in a minute. No,
are you confident, Peter?
Yes.
Well, okay. Bugger me.
Well, you're in big trouble then.
Talking about... Well, there we are. Well, let's go to our best bet with Bet365.
Liam Robertson was the first listener to suggest a bet of the week. And since Roddengate, we've been in poor form. So he's answered the call and he approached me with an email saying the following. Like how Aragorn returned to save Gondor. Like how the Undertaker returned to fight the evil Undertaker. And like how Bob Dylan cast off his electrical era to return back to folk. And Kevin Keegan returned to... No, scrap that. The concern in the voices of the ramble regarding the best better was like a bat signal to me, the man who has the dubious honour of starting it all. So it seems that it falls upon me to return to the fray, to save the day. Yes, this may be a bit up my own arse, and yes, I may have handmade my own football ramble superhero outfit, complete with shin pads with Sven on them, but that's not the issue. The issue here is that I'm here to turn the tables of fortune for every best better and would-be best better out there. So with that, drum roll. Newcastle to beat Huddersfield and both teams to score at 10-3.
There it is! Ooh. Good one!
Ooh, baby.
That's the odds, not the time. Ah. As the winning goal goes in on the 93rd minute, I won't be looking. I'll just be walking silently into the sunset because I knew it would happen. I knew.
I like the cut of this guy's jib.
That's from Liam Robertson. Newcastle to beat Huddersfield with both teams to score is indeed 10-3.
Love that.
Nice.
So £50 that will return £216.67, including stake, with all proceeds going to Prostate Cancer UK. You must be over the age of 18 to gamble and do gamble responsibly. And for more information, go to begamblerware.org. Good luck, Liam, and Godspeed.
Damn right. Damn blooming right. Now, what has Luke asked the listeners this week?
This week I asked them, who do you think is going to win the Premier League and why? In 2026, Marcus.
Oh, nice.
There's a sting in the tail there.
Yeah.
And I've got loads of really funny answers. I'm going to end with one by Oliver Memories Bailey.
Obviously.
Okay. Who are you going to start with?
Sam
Oliver
Price.
Oliver Predictions Bailey, really, in this case.
Sam Price says, picture this. In a dystopian post-apocalyptic world.
Hang on, it's in 8 years' time.
Well, apparently, according to Sam, shit happens in 2020. Don't ask. The FA is determined to remain the last pillar of civilization as we know it. And insist the Premier League continues, involving the 7 teams which have managed to keep enough players alive up until this point. Exeter, Yeovil, Bournemouth, Sunderland, Newcastle, Forest Green, and of course Portsmouth.
Taplow. Winners.
After the time where Derby ends with both teams literally eating each other in a bid for sustenance, the league goes down to a crucial title decider between Portsmouth and Yeovil. After the Yeovil goalkeeper succumbs to the infection minutes before kickoff, the Portsmouth team capitalise and a resurgent Peter Crouch, brackets immune to the disease, heads in at the back post in the final minute of stoppage time, winning the game 3-2 and taking the title. He runs over to manager Steve Cotterill, who emerges from his bunker with a grin on his face. His plan succeeded and his work here is done.
Bugger off, you start off with a Portsmouth win.
Michael Anderson, Newcastle United, once Mike Ashley's 5-year plan fully kicks in. They'll be spewing in fireplaces across the North East come the summer. And Oliver Memories Bailey, ExxonMobil City to beat PetroChina United.
Very good.
By 3 probability clouds to nil in Excellent. The 39th game playoff in Qatar's Stadio del Blatter. With some controversial decisions by referee Cambridge Analytica.
Oh, that is that is so sad.
There we go.
Hilarious. Yeah. At least we could
check out the Facebook page for another question of the week. This time next week.
Very good indeed. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the preview show sponsored by Bet365. It's been a pleasure. Club football is back. We will be talking about it, of course, on Monday's pod. Say goodbye, Luke.
Barry Grintles.
That's the wrong one, Peter.
I know.
Say goodbye, Jimmy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Petey.
Goodbye.
Sort your fingers out, mate.
I'm a robot man.
Go and let Barry Grintles in, mate. He's just at the door.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.